Good morning, folks. We are small in numbers today because so many of us are at the Gay Pride March in St. Louis and at General Assembly, and I'll bet the people at General Assembly are exhausted from what I remember. It's a constant running and choosing between different workshops. So today we're a small group. If anybody wants to come sit up front, you're certainly welcome. Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Robin Crane. I welcome you into this community of love, a community that knows that love is messy, difficult, sometimes painful, and often wonderful. Here we explore what it means to be a community and to carry out our covenant with one another. As a community, we strive to live to the principles of Unitarian Universalists in our congregation and in the larger world. The world needs us. We are Unitarian Universalists, and we need the world. I welcome you, and in particular, any first-time visitors, but I think we're all old-timers here. We do have a nursery this morning, but I don't see any little kids. Maybe all the little kids are at the Gay Pride Festival. I hope so. And of course, you all know that we have a spirit chair at the front in case you're one of those people that needs to be doing things with your hands while you're thinking. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. Our speaker today is Dee Evans. Dee has been a member of the church for 8 years. So I'm sure you'll enjoy hearing her thoughts. I have some announcements. Seekers will meet as a leaderless group during the summer, except for this week. There aren't that many in the group here today, I don't think. Those interested in a lively discussion should pick a topic from the jar, read and discuss it. That sounds like fun. Robin Strandquist, where's Robin? Right there. Says the Sacred Grounds group is looking for a volunteer to assist with the eradication of poison ivy. If you are not allergic to this toxic weed and would like to help, contact Robin. Robin is also selling herbs from our garden. Is that right? From out, right out here by the church, in there in the coffee room afterwards. And I would like to personally thank Robin for cleaning out the honeysuckle by the worker room entrance. It looks a lot better. And there are little flowers there that weren't there before. Little red flowers along the sidewalk. Dee announces that the worship associates have just had a training on how to do slide presentations on Google. So we suggest that you refer to your hymnals for a couple of weeks. Hopefully today the slides will match the music, but she was up at midnight till midnight one night trying to get those slides to work, so we'll hope. And Sunshine did a wonderful set of instructions, so if anybody else wants to learn how to do that kind of thing, we'll share it with you. Joy, who is the RE chair, says that the effort to sign up volunteers for the summer to take care of the nursery has been completed successfully. Joy wants to thank everyone who volunteered. There will be a new list to start over again trying to fill come close to December. Okay, we will begin our worship with a prelude. Thank you. Thank you, that was lovely. We begin with the opening words called Crossing Bridges by Jan Tadeo, who was a UU minister who grew up in Virginia. The introductory words are mine because Jan and I shared an interesting experience. One autumn in Virginia, I arranged with a friend who lived 100 miles away to come from different directions and meet in Chincoteague, so we could spend a few days on Assateague Island to commune with the wild horses and the migrating blue herons who congregated on Assateague every winter, usually the weekend before Thanksgiving. Now, in that part of the country, it tends to be a little rainy and windy and cloudy at that time of year. Just getting to Chincoteague from Richmond was an adventure. For the land is distinctly different, and the pace of life is noticeably slower. And to get to the Delmarva Peninsula in Virginia, one has to take US 13 over and through the Chesapeake Bay Bridge and Tunnel, which is a 20-mile long construction with four man-made islands zooming out over the Chesapeake Bay, surrounded by this gray water, you know, and white caps and deep water, sometimes ships, lots of water birds. Especially in the late autumn weather, driving that bridge is an adventure into the unknown. Whether you have clouds, wind, rain, or beams of sunlight streaming through the gaps in the clouds, there is something timelessly mysterious and truly exciting about being on a bridge whose ends you cannot see, surrounded by miles of salt water, seabirds, and wildlife. Jan Tadeo grew up in Virginia. She tells about her own northern approach to the Assateague Island. I came up from the south, she comes down from the north. She went over the Verrazano Narrows Bridge, and she talks about the adventure and surprise it always offered her as she and her family approached the really high point on the bridge where it looked like you were just going to go off the edge into the water. She likens her scary Verrazano Bridge crossings to the adventures that UUs experience in their spiritual journeys. Unitarian Universalists step out into the unknown all the time as we embark on our spiritual adventures. We go searching for new ways to make meaning of our lives, to create a more just and loving world, and to answer questions of ultimacy together. We seek creative ways to raise our children with inquiring minds and loving hearts, and to provide them with the tools to navigate a truly unpredictable future. We cross bridges and borders as we learn to navigate the multicultural world around us that challenges us to expand our worldview and embrace new ways of engaging a changing world. Whether we are crossing a bridge from a place of comfort to challenges we never anticipated, or from our own cultural norms to completely new worldviews, we have resources, friends, and mentors to guide us. If we are crossing the bridge from youth to adult, or from career to retirement, somehow we find the tools we need to navigate our way to the other shore. For this amazing journey, we carry in our backpacks a sense of wonder, a sense of humor, and a lot of courage. Our compass is the compassion we hold for all our neighbors. Our sustenance is the joy of discovering our true selves and experiencing the divine in one another. Our map is the sacred covenant we hold with one another to walk this journey together. With so many tools to guide us and support us as we approach new bridges, it is not such a leap of faith to trust that we will arrive at the distant shore. Together, we can boldly go where our vision and faith call us to go. Okay, who's going to light our chalice for us? Mary? It's always a two-step process. I was thinking about this last night. You want the chalice lighter because it's beautiful and traditional, but we could take that old technological thing and just walk up here and light it. It's not as much fun, though. Today, we light our chalice. Join me in saying our chalice lighting words. We light this chalice, symbol of Unitarian Universalism. May it remind us of the divine spark in all of creation, the power of love to heal what is broken, and to be grateful for life's blessings each day. Thank you, Mary. Our first hymn today is one of our favorites, number 1008 in the blue hymnal, When Our Heart Is in a Holy Place. If I remember, this is the part with the flashy piano accompaniment. Anyway, it's pretty nice. Each week we take time to recognize the joys and sorrows, the celebrations and struggles of this community. We do this by taking a stone or stones from the bowls as we enter or the bowl up here on the chancel. We allow the stones to bring us into awareness of those things most important in our life through thought or meditation. We then place the stones in the cleansing waters of this community, which includes a little bit of water collected from our annual water communion. If you have joys, sorrows, celebrations, or struggles you wish to recognize, you are invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrow.
Starting saying the words as we come up. The earth, the water, the food. Go ahead. Return. Return, return. The earth, the air, the fire, the water. Return, return, return. two stones in, one to represent the joys and sorrows of all the congregation who is out doing our social justice work and being at convention. The second one I put in for all those who are not here to express their joys and their sorrows. I invite you to a time of meditation or prayer or contemplation, as is your own spiritual practice. I invite you to be present here and now and to notice your body. Notice the sounds around you. Do not try to silence the sounds, but rather let the sounds become a part of your silence, of you. I invite you to notice the smells around you and the feeling of the air and your clothing on your skin. Notice how the pew and the floor feel beneath you. I invite you to take a slow, deep breath in and then out. In and then out. In this relaxed place, I invite you to listen to your body and to the sounds around you and to the breathing of others. Do you hear your heart beating, your stomach sounds, your joints cracking, or any other sounds from your body? Continue to slowly breathe in and out. Scan your body from the top of your head to your feet. Notice what feels relaxed and what feels tense. Now scan your body and send love to your body where it is tense, and thank the parts of your body that feel good. Now take a deep breath in and let it out. And thank everyone around you for their presence here. Now become aware of the sounds in the rooms, the smell, the glow of the fire from the chalice, and slowly open your eyes if you've closed them and notice everything here present now at this service. Join me in singing Comfort Me. Joy, could you please start it? Thank you.
Each week, we participate in a spiritual practice of offering to this community a portion of the financial resources that we ourselves receive. We do this as a dedication to our congregation so that our covenant can be lived and the principles of Unitarian Universalism can spread into the world beyond our congregation. We give because we care and because the message of love without creeds is needed by our ever dogmatic world. This week's offering will be lovingly received. May it be lovingly given.
Please join in reciting the offertory blessing. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and our offerings. Please stand if you are able and join us to sing the hymn 1021, Lean on Me.
Thank you.
Please be seated.
About 50 years after Darth Vader was conquered and the kingdom went on, there developed a kingdom within the kingdom called Ubab Shaban. And that particular kingdom was quite developed, except for dividing people into typical sexual roles. And they were crazy about the game of Quidditch. And for some reason, all the males, all the boys, played Quidditch. All the girls dressed up in various animal costumes, and they cheered for the various teams that played Quidditch that were all named after animals. They had no place for people who couldn't play Quidditch that were males. They had no place for people who couldn't dress up in the animal costumes, the girls, and cheer for the males that played Quidditch. They had no place for people who were claiming to be neither male nor female. So there was this outgroup. And this outgroup were females who weren't cheerleaders, and they were males who weren't able to play Quidditch, and they were everyone that they would not let play Quidditch or cheer. And this group of young teenagers got together, and they decided to see what they could do to solve this problem of being an outgroup. And they began to research history to see what other people had done, for these were really intelligent young kids. And they looked way back in history, and they found a group that accepted everyone. And it was the only group in history that they could find that accepted people. Not that they were a perfect group. At times they had rejected and not helped those who were of different colors. At times they had rejected and not helped those who did not claim to be either male or female. But they grew out of that, and they became a welcoming group. They even trained people to be welcoming. So these young teenagers decided in this very advanced age that maybe they would look deeper into this group called Unitarians. And they would look through the history of Unitarians, and these young people began their own group called Unitarians. And they accepted not only people that they liked, but anybody that wanted to join them. And after a while, believe it or not, Quidditch players came in, and even the cheerleaders in the animal outfits. And so we, as Unitarians, survived forever.
The reading today is from The How of Happiness, A New Approach to Getting the Life You Want by Sonia Lyubomirsky. I hope I got that right. In this reading, the writer addresses why religious or spiritually oriented people tend to be happier than those who are not. After all, she says, religion is usually not practiced in isolation, but within a fellowship of kindred spirits who share one another's burdens, reach out to those in need, and offer friendship and companionship. To be sure, people who attend religious services on a regular basis have larger social networks, that is, more friends and acquaintances on whom they can rely. And they actually do receive tangible help from members of their religious group. This isn't surprising. Religious services and many activities associated with them, such as charities, volunteer programs, and outreach initiatives, bring together people who have a lot in common, like our friends today who are at General Assembly or at the Pride March. They love meeting people from other churches and other organizations. Members share not only the basic assumptions and beliefs inherent in their religion, but more important, political and social values. This fact enables one-to-one social, emotional, and material support, and it creates a sense of community among the members of the church, synagogue, or mosque, leading people to feel appreciated, respected, and provided for. This sense reinforces members' identity and affirms their lifestyle. After all, it feels good when people whom you respect and admire share similar roles and values and your approach to life.
Happiness, the way Sonia Lubrominsky describes it, is subjective well-being. Now, you all know that I like Buddhism, and one of the purposes that the Buddhists feel in life is to be happy. We all, in fact, according to the Dalai Lama, that each of us has an innate desire to seek happiness and to overcome suffering. So to be happy, we have to overcome suffering. And the Buddhists say there's three types of suffering. One is the suffering of conditioning. It's what our world gives to us that says will make us happy. And we accept that if we live an unexamined life. And we all have had that. We've all had where we thought, oh, if I didn't have the right whatever, you know, even if that whatever was, you know, a certain kind of pen. We've all had that experience, and we all realize that what society says makes us happy is not necessarily what really does. Then there is what the Dalai Lama calls the suffering of suffering. And that is the suffering that comes because of life, birth, death. It's what happens because we live. A toddler can tell you what suffering is in a, with his tears. You know, two toddlers are playing, one comes, bops him over the head, takes the truck, and walks off. And then the one with the truck is left there crying. They're suffering. So from a very early age, we know what suffering is. There is also the suffering of change. That's when we have something and we want it to stay forever the way it is. Now, suffering causes great emotional experience, which confuses the mind. And the reason it does is because we become so emotional. Now, I understood clearly the first two types of suffering, the suffering of conditioning and the suffering that just happens through life. The suffering of change really confused me. And I think it's because I'm like one of those kids who grew up in a military environment. I didn't, but I'm comparing myself to those kids. I had a group one time of 10-year-olds, and they were all military kids, and they used to call themselves the military brats. And I asked them, how do you deal with all this change? You know, you all have moved, you've done things that other, you have to get used to new schools. And they go, oh, that's just the way it is. We like change. We know how to go someplace else. We know how to make friends. We know how to meet kids. And we usually do it on a military base, so it all works out, even if we're going to public school. These kids had dealt with change. From a very young age, I dealt with change. Then my career, not all of it, but a great majority of it, was with a government agency. Now, any of you who have worked for government agencies know two things. Bosses come and bosses go as political winds come and political winds go. So authority is just somebody that comes and goes. And the same thing with theory. You know, this way of doing it's going to solve our problem, whatever it is. I don't know what agency it is, you know, no matter what agency it is. But then when that boss goes, another new theory comes in. What we learn under that as government employees is we're really doing the work. We're really treating those patients, getting the roads paved, whatever it is. while all this change happens around us, and you just learn to deal with the change. Which is one of the reasons I was so puzzled by the response of some people when Kleber left. I was mystified. Ministers are like bosses. They're not very important. They come, they go. Who cares? Next minister will come, next minister will go. Don't worry about it. So I was mystified, didn't understand it. And then one day, about 2 months ago, I became irrationally angry at Sunshine. There was nothing Sunshine could do that was right. And I was grousing to my husband. What kind of silly person takes a job that takes you someplace and then 2 years later you just up and leave? You know, who would go into that kind of profession? And besides, it's better that he's going. He's late with stuff, you know, and I can't stand it when people are late. My husband turns and looks at me and says, "Boy, you're really going to miss Sunshine." At which point, the tears started falling down my face because I knew the anger was a cover-up for my sorrow. And I was utterly confused. I'd been to churches. I never cared about a minister. But suddenly I did. And suddenly I understood all those people that felt such sorrow when Kleber left. I found myself understanding what they were going through. Now, when one suffers, one becomes totally overwhelmed by emotion, whether it's any kind of emotion. So mine was first anger and then sorrow. That's the first thing. The second thing was fear. I'm going to lose my church. The new minister's going to come in, and he or she or they or them are going to change whatever I love. I know they're going to do that, and I'm going to lose my church. And people are going to leave again like some people left when Sunshine came. And I'm going to lose people I love. And as I went on in my fear, I began what everybody else does when they become afraid. I catastrophized. I made the situation absolutely horrible in my mind. Now, these are common reactions to suffering. We become overwhelmed, we become fearful, and we catastrophize. Now, if you turn to Sonia's books, if I may call her by her first name, and other books on happiness, if you turn to any psychology about how to deal with emotions, the one thing you know is that there has to be a plan when one is faced with change that one does not want. Now, that was very easy to say, and I knew that, but carrying it out was very difficult. So when I have something difficult, I turn to Buddhism, and the first thing that I learned is, which I knew, but I had to relearn it, is sit in meditation with whatever you're feeling. So I had to sit there. Now, if one feels whatever emotion, even giddy love, and you're sitting there and you're thinking, this person is so wonderful, they're just absolute. If you sit with that emotion, whether it be giddy love or sorrow, one will learn that emotions are temporary. Eventually, your mind and your feelings, as you sit with that emotion, will move away from it. You'll start thinking about something else, even if it's as simple as, what am I going to make for supper? Now, meditators often can bring their mind back to what they're experiencing, but the point of sitting with the emotion is to learn it's temporary. It will go away. It will change. Emotions do that. Last night, Krista Tippett said, "Do not call love an emotion." And I loved that because, to use the word love in a trite way, because she's right. Love, true love, lasts longer. So, and Infatuation does not. Something we try very hard to get across to teenagers. If you are raising teenagers, you can explain that better than I can. So after sitting, doing the first part of my plan to deal with change, which was to meditate, I looked at my fear. Now, my fear, everybody's fear, we have two instinctual responses. One of them is flight, and the other one is fight. Now, in my then momentarily craziness, I decided, well, I'll just go to UU, and I'll tell them this is the craziest plan, these interim ministers, than ever, and see if they can't convince, if I can't convince them to change this idea and get Sunshine to change. Now, that, of course, is crazy fantasy, and I knew it was. Okay. But it was there. It was the fight response. That craziness, as I was thinking that, made me realize that, of course, I couldn't do that. It was a silly fight response. And I want to clarify the word craziness. I'm not talking about mental illness. Mental illness is something that has a cause. And I'm distinguishing that from what I call craziness, is when all of us as humans have the silly responses that I had. My fight response was to go to UU and fight this. Of course, nobody's going to listen to me. But that's what I mean by craziness. Then, of course, when I realized I couldn't fight it, flight kicked in. Okay, I've had it. That's it. If I don't like what the new minister's going to do, I'm going to pick my body up and I'll go elsewhere. Then I thought, oh, I'll miss my friends. Well, I'll invite them. We'll start something in somebody's house on Sunday. We'll do whatever. Just as silly of a response. So when one has a fight and flight response, and we're making a plan to deal with our suffering, what we have to do is find a middle way between fight and flight and come up with what could be in the middle. Now, like sitting in meditation with your sorrow, facing the challenge of suffering by trying to sit in meditation, facing the challenge of suffering by trying to find a middle way between fight and flight are not easy. But they are the same attributes, the same talents that those 10-year-old girls had developed to come up with being in the military and going from one place to another. So coming up with the middle way is really important. What could I do? Well, what I could do is give the new minister a chance. What I could do is try to step back, take a deep breath, let them come, and try to work with them. I may find that I like the minister. So instead of fight or flight, there was a middle way. And for all of suffering, when we get that fight or flight response, we look for a middle way. That is our challenge in facing suffering. Now, the catastrophic thinking is harder to do because it's also tied in with the fear. It's tied in with anxiety. It's tied in with sorrow. It's tied in with deep depression. It's the belief that whatever can go wrong will go wrong. So if this minister comes, I'm not going to like her, blah, blah, blah. That simply involves using self-talk. Meeting that challenge of that kind of suffering is using self-talk. Okay, if I give the minister a chance, if I don't like something that minister is doing, I could go and talk to that minister. I don't have to keep in my catastrophic thinking. If I don't like what the minister is doing, I can sit through a service for the sake of other people that I want to be with. And at that moment, something clicked in me. Something that made me realize why this church lasted for 180 years and why it will continue to go on for another 180 years. At the end of each service, we turn and we look at each other. The minister isn't involved in that. Ministers come, ministers go. And I'm not saying they're not important, because they are. But the people is, and this church is what I am dedicated to. And that is my plan for meeting the challenge of losing sunshine. I'm going to keep my dedication to this congregation, because that's where it belongs. Not to any one person, but to the congregation. Last week, we got a lovely gift. I don't know if you can see this gift. This gift is a combination of many people. It's a combination of Debbie Lovell doing the artwork. It's Nan's hands with the butterfly. And it's the covenant we all put together. And it's the frame and getting it framed, paying for that, that Sandy Shaner did. This is what I am dedicated to. It's what we here in this congregation are all dedicated to. It's keeping our covenant with one another. It's not an easy covenant. It's hard to respect people that I disagree with. It's hard to have compassion for somebody that when I don't understand. Believe me, when Kleber left and I didn't understand people's sorrow, it was hard for me to listen. And I didn't always do it gracefully. I failed some people in keeping the covenant. And the first part of it is honoring our diversity. That means honoring everybody in our diversity, even those who may not agree with just what I think, but being open to everyone and discussing it, and my hearing each person. Last night, Krista Tibbett said, listening is not just waiting for the person to quit talking so you can say what you want. It's sitting there and really being present and trying to receive what that person is saying. I found something strange that I think is also amusing. Give me a client and I can sit and listen for 3 hours, but give me some kind of political topic or give me a theological topic, and man, I want to get in there and I want to give my opinion right away. I don't want to hear the other person. But if I'm going to be committed to this covenant, I have to honor, I have to listen, I have to make room for diversity in a wide range of beliefs. The other thing is we are remembering our humanness. We have to learn to deal with our own humanness. When we screw up, we have to learn to deal with others when they screw up. That kind of commitment, that kind of dedication to this congregation takes a lot of strength, because it means if somebody decides that they want to do something and it turns out all wrong for the church and we have to fix it, I still have to be dedicated to that group who did that. And I hope they will be dedicated to me if I make an error. We don't have to do anything. If we're going to be dedicated, it is best to remember our humanness. The last part says, we are engaged with our own and larger community. This type of dedication is extremely hard for me. It's not hard for me to get engage with our community. I love engaging with our community. I was supposed to open the church last night, and my husband's been in and out of hospitals and rehabs, and he's in step-down ICU, so I've been running back to Christian, and it's been difficult, and I said, okay, I got to open the church, and then I'll make coffee, and then I'll put the stuff out, and I'll do this, and I'll do I walked in the door, and people were here. The coffee was made. The treats were out. I didn't have to do anything. And I had 30 minutes of pure relaxation. You see, that's why I love being with this community. People just jump in there and do things, even when they don't have to. But engaging with the wider community is more difficult for me. It's going to be a challenge engaging with Emerson as we share our minister. It's going to be a challenge as we change our Saturday social justice thing. See, buying products is very easy for me, but if we decide not to do that and I have to do something else, it may be harder, particularly if we coordinate with another church. But if I'm dedicated to this church, I will keep this covenant, because that's what dedication means. But that isn't all that dedication to being a Unitarian means. It means there is a larger group of us, and this larger group of us has a set of principles. And I used to think I liked those principles. I used to think they were wonderful. And then I decided I was going to try and live them. And they became not so wonderful. Those are hard principles to live. Respecting the right and dignity of everyone, even the fool who cuts me off in traffic and all causes me to break and almost hit him. I'm supposed to respect that person's right and dignity? And I could go on with each of our principles and explain that being dedicated to them and being a Unitarian is not easy. People think you can walk in and just believe anything you want and do anything you want. But that's not true of Unitarianism. Lisa Presley made that very clear when she gave us a seminar. Lisa is from the Midwest region. She said, don't say you can believe anything, because if somebody came in here and said that the color of my skin or my sexual orientation makes me better than you, you're not you, you. We're all going to deal with suffering. We're all going to be overwhelmed. We're all going to have fear. We're all going to catastrophize. That's part of being human. But the plan of action that we develop, I chose dedication to this congregation. Meaning, I'm going to keep the covenant. I'm going to keep the UU principles to the best of my ability. I'm not going to walk away, even if the minister changes everything. And I'm not going to pick up my toys, that is money, and go. That's not dedication. So I'm going to be dedicated to this congregation in the face of a change I don't particularly like. I'm going to be dedicated and keep being a UU. Forever. No matter what you're suffering from, no matter how much suffering challenges you, look and find a plan of action. And if you do, you will find your way through it.
Rise as you are willing and able, and join us in our closing hymn, number 1028 in the teal green hymnal, The Fire of Commitment. Thank you.
the chandelier as center and face each other. You are looking at your congregation, your community, the people to whom you are dedicated and who join you in living the Unitarian Universalist principles and our church covenant. Smile at each other. Then sit and enjoy the postlude. And after the postlude, have coffee with each other.